Welcome to tonight's Saturday Night Special, episode 100.
I'm Braden Douglas. I challenge you to invest in yourself, invest in others, develop your influence, and impact the world by using your time, your talent, and your treasures to live out your calling. Having the ability to lead with impact is key. And one way to be inspired to do that is to listen to this, the Inspired Stewardship Podcast with my friend, Scott Mader.
I think it's really important when people need access, they speak up. It's easier said than done. But I will say, if you want to affect change in your local, whatever business it is, the best way to do it is to contact the head of the company or the CEO or director. Don't go through visitor access. Don't go through accessibility. You want the head of the company to know the issue.
Welcome and thank you for joining us on the Inspired Stewardship Podcast. If you truly desire to become the person who God wants you to be, then you must learn to use your time, your talent, and your treasures for your true calling. In the Inspired Stewardship Podcast, you will learn to invest in yourself, invest in others, and develop your influence so that you can impact the world. In tonight's Saturday Night Special, I interview Janice Lentz about her work bringing access to those with a hearing loss. I asked Janice about why she has a passion for this work, and I also ask her to share her approach for bringing access to everyone, and she shares more about her calling and the impact that she hopes she has on the world. You know, one area that a lot of folks need some help with is around the area of productivity. Getting not just more things done, but actually getting the right things done can be really tough. I've got a course called Productivity for Your Passion that's designed to help you do this and then to hold you accountable and walk with you so that you can tailor productivity not just to be getting more done, but actually getting the right things done. What's more, we take the approach of looking at your personality and how you actually look at things in the world and tailor the productivity system to your personality. Because the truth is, a lot of the systems that are out there are written really well for somebody with a particular personality type, but if you have a different approach to things, they just don't work. But there's tools and techniques and approaches that you can take that will work for anyone. And we help you do that in Productivity for Your Passion. Check it out over at inspiredstewardship.com/launch. Janice S. Lentz founded Hearing Access and Innovations, the only company dedicated to helping businesses, cultural institutions, entertainment venues, and government agencies around the world better serve people with a hearing loss. She is an internationally recognized hearing access consultant who is sought after for her ability to assess needs and develop and implement creative solutions across organizational and geographic boundaries. Welcome to the show, Janice.
Thank you so much, Scott, for having me.
So we talked a little bit in the intro about this passion and this work you do around hearing loss. Can you tell us a little bit about your journey and what brought you to this passionate advocation for those that have a hearing loss?
Because I have a daughter who has a hearing loss. And when she was diagnosed, the doctor immediately said, "Don't worry, there are special schools for her." I hadn't even wrapped my head around the diagnosis, and already the bar for her life was lowered. I live in Manhattan. I don't do special unless they're Ivy League university special. And I don't think that's what the doctor had in mind. And so I decided I had a choice. I could either change the world or I could lower my standards. And since lowering my standards wasn't an option, I decided it was easier to change the world than change my standards. And so that's what I did. And it wasn't meant to be being a martyr. It wasn't meant to be like a project. It was meant to just be so our family could function. And then somewhere along the way, as I was doing it, I realized that, wow, there may be something here. And it started growing as my access work expanded in Manhattan and then around the state of New York. And then we would travel. We travel extensively. So when we traveled around the United States, I work on projects where I didn't see the access. And I would file complaints there. And then later, as we traveled internationally as well, I would see the access existed in other countries. And I'm like, why does it exist in other countries and not in the United States? So I would take photographs of it to prove it. And then when I didn't see it in other places, I would show, like, well, it's here. And the next thing you knew, I was running this program that I fell into by happenstance. Although I am trained as an attorney, and my goal when I graduated law school was to change the world, I actually just didn't think this would be how. And I frankly didn't really think what I was going to do. I just knew I wanted to have a profound impact in the world.
So one of the things I've heard you talk about is it's not just as simple as putting things in writing or, you know, having other sorts of access like that, but rather you have to look at it with a three-pronged approach to improving access with those that have a hearing loss. Can you talk a little bit more about what you mean by that and why it's not just as simple as what I think a lot of people think of? Oh, we've got closed captioning, everything's good, or that kind of simple approach to it.
The three-prong approach in order to reach, so hearing loss is a spectrum. And I think that's the part that don't understand is that where you, there is a spectrum of hearing loss. So you have from one end, people who may be having a little difficulty hearing, they're not responding, let's say, to a spouse or their children the same way. And that could also, by the way, be selective hearing.
No. In this case, I actually do have a diagnosed hearing loss because of ear infections when I was a child. I've got a 50% in one ear and about 25% in the other ear in certain frequencies, but other frequencies I hear perfectly fine.
Hearing aids?
I do not currently. I haven't needed them yet, but at some point, it will get to the point where I will need some sort of hearing aid.
Interesting. So this is very common. And actually, it takes, on average, 7 years for a person who thinks they may need a hearing aid to the point they get a hearing aid.
I'm probably in that seven.
And for men, it seems to be a little more, less, the longer, on the longer side than women, for all the reasons you would think.
Yeah. You mean because we're stubborn?
I was trying to figure out how to politely say that.
No, just say it. It's okay. I'll admit to that. My wife calls that testosterone poisoning, by the way. Mm-hmm. Testosterone poisoning.
The reason
why men fight against going to the doctor is because they suffer from testosterone poisoning.
That's brilliant. I love that. I really like that. So you have the spectrum of somebody like yourself, where they may be starting to feel like they've lost some hearing, all the way to the other side of the spectrum where someone is deaf. There is no one solution to reach that entire bandwidth. Mm-hmm. So in order to reach everyone, because of the 48 million people in the US with some form of hearing loss, less than 1% is deaf. So someone who is deaf uses sign language. Mm-hmm. That's less than 1%. But sign language is critical to people who are deaf. But sign language, because it's visible, many people will think it is a band-aid solution for everyone, except the vast majority of people do not use sign language. In fact, if you suddenly would not learn sign language, it's like learning a second language. And I think people fail to understand. The same way learning French when you're older is a little hard, not impossible, but learning sign language is the same. It's a whole nother language with a whole mm-hmm. different syntax. So to reach the audience that is not deaf, there are two things that are needed, because depending on where you are. So for the person who has someone like yourself, you would probably rely on captions, a visual translation of the sound, because you, without personalizing this, someone who may not be admitting they have a hearing loss, so they're not going to get something to put in their ear because they would have to admit it, but they may be, without realizing it, relying on captions. Then you have somebody who has gotten hearing aids or a cochlear implant, and they still want to hear the sound. If you can hear the sound of a bird tweeting, for example, or music or voice, you want to hear it. If you have that ability, you don't want to read it. And this is the part where a lot of people don't get it. And get it is the right word. And people who are, let's say, access coordinators will say, oh, I had someone from the National Endowment of the Arts tell me to be able to hear is like wanting Rolls-Royce level access versus Chrysler access by just having captions. And I was like, that is ridiculous. If sound is not important, then shut the sound for everyone. Mm-hmm. But you wouldn't. And then another Bank of America didn't feel you needed to have induction loops at the banks because they felt you could write notes or read lips. But can you imagine writing notes back and forth to a teller? That would be beyond irritating. And you can imagine the people behind you getting more and more frustrated, right? Like you could see how this would go. And who wants to put necessarily everything in writing? You want it.
It's also a security thing because what if you're writing down account numbers and all sorts of information? Where does it go after that?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. That's a great point. And it's just unbelievable. So people who have residual hearing want to hear, and no one should be deciding for them. They don't need to hear. Mm-hmm. Then you have the group that going further towards the right on the spectrum, who they've lost their hearing, even with a cochlear implant or a hearing aid, or they refuse to get that one. They can't hear anymore. They are really in a pickle because if they're not learning sign language, mm-hmm. they're really, and they won't wear a hearing aid or cochlear implant. No, will not work for them for whatever reason. They are really 100% dependent on visual translation. And that's really a difficult place to be. And then again, you move to the people who are deaf. But there's a lot of gray between where someone who might be deaf knows sign language, but then uses captions. Or someone who has residual hearing is also relying on captions to miss a couple of words. So it's not as quite as clear, but it's basically a three-pronged approach to effective communication. Right. And when you have all three, then you've reached the full spectrum. It's not a menu to pick and choose.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, and you mentioned induction loops as one of the assistive devices. Can you, just for anyone who doesn't know what that is, because they're not everywhere, can you explain what an induction loop is?
Yes. And I'm sorry. So on the assistive listening systems, there are three types. You have an FM, radio frequency, mm-hmm. infrared, point of light. Those two systems require a person to wear a receiver around their neck and receive the sound, either the FM signal or the light point of light signal. In a post-pandemic world, people are not going to want to wear anything that touched another human being, right? Mm-hmm. It's just not going to happen. Then in not only that, but if you don't wear hearing aids, you need, and you have a mild loss, you have to put that in your ear. Now imagine taking something that somebody else wore and putting in your ear and being dependent on somebody else saying, I cleaned it, who is not exactly in healthcare mm-hmm. and their standards may not be up to yours. It's just not going to happen. So the best system is the third option, an induction loop. And what an induction loop does is you take your hearing aid or cochlear implant and you switch it to the T or telecoil setting. And then there's an induction loop in the premises that and the sound electromagnetically bounces to your hearing aid or cochlear implant. You don't have to ask permission to activate it. It's already on. You don't have to wear a device. No issues with...
You wear the device you already have.
Basically. Exactly. Yeah. You wear the device you already have. It's easy peasy. You don't have to worry about it being broken the same way of devices being broken or people not charging the batteries. This is built in. Mm-hmm. And it's really the only option, especially in a post-COVID world. Mm-hmm. I don't see anybody ever putting something in their ear again that's touched another human being.
And that's something that I know, you know, because we looked into it actually for our church and are trying to get that built into our church. Because, and again, in some ways, it's funny because my pastor has a hearing loss and has a cochlear implant. And then I have a hearing loss and I'm the AV. So we're both advocating for it because we're both like, we could use it at some point. I know I'm going to need it. And of course, we have an aging population in our church that many of whom are beginning to have hearing loss and wear hearing aids. And this is something we need to do just to be able to have access for everybody. We have slides, we have captioning, we do all of that already. But like you said, that's not the same as being able to hear the sounds of the choir singing actually in your ears clearly and cleanly as well.
It's also, think about it, in houses of worship, you're also asking people to donate money. And so you need them to come. Mm-hmm. People need to be able to hear the ask. Mm-hmm. So if they can't hear the ask, they can't give. So you'll see induction loops in a lot of houses of worship. Because they've gotten it. You need people to come. If otherwise, there's no value to that person. If right. they stop coming and they stop coming because they stopped hearing, So it doesn't matter what the religion is. Houses of worship are really, they get why they should put in the induction looms, because if you can't hear the ask, you can't give. Mm-hmm. It boils down to also money right there.
And that kind of brings us to the obvious question, because there is cost involved in doing all of this. So from why do you think businesses, governments, houses of worship, all of these different entities, why is it important that they even provide for those with the hearing?
Just from a common sense point of view, right? Like from a on taking the common sense approach, it's a human right and a civil right. Imagine just excluding people from the experience. And people seem to understand racism, but they don't understand ableism, which is the equivalent of racism against people with disabilities. And so if you, for example, tell somebody, Rosa Parks won her case rightfully because no one should tell her where to sit on the bus. Because taking a bus is not about going from point A to point B. It's also about the experience. If you take that same concept and you apply it to hearing access or any disability discrimination, it's about the experience. So when someone goes to a bank and they can't hear the person and someone else says, oh no, you don't need to hear, you can pass notes, that's about changing the experience for that person. And it's really not different than telling somebody where they can sit on the bus, in my opinion. And so putting it in is good business sense. It communicates to all their customers, we are a welcoming place. Too many people and businesses use accessibility as a PR or a tagline. Oh yes, we're accessible, we're ADA compliant. I really love when people say that, because there is no ADA checklist.
No.
And there is no certification. So that's a falsehood right there. Whenever they say that, I'm like, okay, I don't know who you're relying on, but that's an inaccurate statement. You may have received your certificate of occupancy from the buildings department to open your doors because you're wheelchair accessible. Right. That doesn't mean you're ADA compliant, because there is no ADA compliant certification anywhere in the country. And so when you put up the sign symbols of access and there is meaningful access behind it, not you just, there's another bank that has all the symbols on their front door. There's no access behind it for people with hearing loss. I don't really understand how they have that symbol on the door, because it doesn't exist. And nobody really knows what the symbol is there. So it's good business. People also seem to forget that people with disabilities, or in my case, my topic, hearing loss, they don't travel in packs. It's not like when you go to a theater or a hotel, okay, here come all the people with disabilities, or here comes all the people with hearing loss. It doesn't work like that. When they go, for example, to an amusement park, they're bringing all their friends. But if they can't go, they may choose another option of going somewhere else where they can go. You lose business, and it's really good business sense, and companies are leaving money on the table. And I think part of it is they don't really understand. They see the out-of-pocket cost, but they put in ramps for people to enter the building. They put in a wheelchair accessible bathroom. Do they ever measure the number of people who use that toilet? No, it's just there because they have to put it there. You know, likely they have
somebody's
to put it
passed
there.
A law and said they have to put it there, so they put it there.
But for hearing access, it's programmatic access, and sometimes people will ask to justify the numbers, but you can't. The problem is when you activate that induction loop, you can't see who is using it. But you have people coming who are happy, and hopefully they'll leave good. I always encourage people with hearing loss to take that extra burden, let the company know you used it, let them know how great it is, so they have some data, because businesses are driven by data. And even though we know there are 48 million people with some form of hearing loss, if they get a few compliments, it really will help add the access. But I will say Nederlander Theaters in New York City had started with induction loops in their theaters. For Hamilton was one of the first theaters. And now as they renovate, because in the Broadway theaters, you have to put it on the floor under the seats, lift the rug. It's a really complicated. It's not always that complicated.
Out,
you have to pull everything out. Yeah. But it's not always so complicated. But Broadway theaters are a whole different animal. And as they renovate every theater, they are putting induction loops in, because they get it. The people who come to daytime matinees are older adults. It's good business, and they're having such incredible success. They eliminated the company who's distributing a large majority of the devices, so it helps cut down. They don't have to worry about breakage. They don't have to worry about complaints. When people are going to the theater, no one wants to wear a stigmatizing device. They just don't want to. They want to be able to just be in control of their own access.
So we're going to kind of transition and ask some questions that I try to ask all of my guests. But before I go there, is there anything else you'd like to share with the listener about your program or some of the topics that we've talked about today?
I think it's really important when people need access, they speak up. It's easier said than done. But I will say, if you want to affect change in your local, whatever business it is, the best way to do it is to contact the head of the company or the CEO or director. Don't go through visitor access. Don't go through accessibility. You want the head of the company to know the issue, because until you get buy-in from the CEO or the director, there is no money tied to fixing this. And when you go through the access coordinator, it just doesn't happen. The only way to affect significant change is by going to the top. And having done this now for 19 years, I have never had a single project happen by going through the designated person. Every single success was done by going to whoever is running the organization. And if that person doesn't hear you, then you have to go even higher and figure out who their levers are, who triggers their levers, whether it's a government agency or it's board members.
Or
their donors or someone. But don't bother, if I have learned anything, don't bother going from the bottom, because it just doesn't work. It'll just spin your wheels. But when you come from the top and then the person asks you to work with that access coordinator, then that CEO or director has already given buy-in to work with this person. And then if you aren't getting success, you can go back to them, because that was your starting point and you're not going above someone's head. But I share that because I think we need to speed this up across the country, the access, and I need more people to engage in it. And I think understanding the secret sauce of how to affect significant change quickly is what my goal is, to pass down this secret sauce.
So I try to ask all my guests this, you know, one of the, my tagline is Inspired Stewardship. That's my brand. Stewardship is an important concept to me. And I honestly think the topic we're talking about today falls into that category of stewardship in my mind. So what does stewardship mean to you, and what has its impact been on your life?
I'm not sure. Tell me how you use stewardship.
I don't want to tell you how I use it. Everyone has a different definition, and that's actually part of the value, is I'm trying to uncover how people do it. The technical definition of stewardship is caring for the resources that you've been given. And that's a Google. If you want to Google it, that's the technical definition, taking care of the resources that you've been given. So stewardship of the earth is taking care of the earth's resources. Financial stewardship is taking care of financial resources. A company will talk about stewardship, which means they're taking care of the resources that they've got, whatever that is. So it can be used in a lot of different ways. That's kind of part of the point of the question, is how do you think of it, or how would you use that word?
Interesting. No, I know the definition, but it's not a word that I frequently use. But I think of it as like my stewardship is how I give back to the community. So that's why I was asking how you mean it, because Michael, so many people helped my daughter, who did, by the way, end up going to an Ivy League university.
So she got the special school after all, but it's not quite the way the doctor meant in the first place.
Exactly. She did get that special school, but so many people helped along the way. It was similar to, it does, as Hillary Clinton said, it does take a village to accomplish anything great. So for me, my stewardship is giving back and making sure that I help other places. And I think that's part of when you ask at the beginning of the show, like, what drives me? I got so much help from so many people. And some people view it as like I'm a lone wolf, which is a falsehood, because there's no way I could accomplish so many projects in so many different fields without so many people helping me. So I am, just as Senator Harkin called me once, which I forgot until I just repeating this, I'm the point on the sword. right? Mm. Someone has to start it. So my stewardship is being the point on the sword. I am unafraid to put my head on the chopping block and speak up and call people out for bad. I have zero problem with that. I have zero problem going to the top of any organization, reaching out to presidents or prime ministers. That's my MO. We have a mutual friend, Ruth Gotian, who wrote when I reached out to the Queen of England. and she wrote about that in Forbes. But I regularly will email prime ministers or presidents and ask for help. And I'm bold about that. So being, I understand a lot of people are afraid to do that. So for some reason, I'm not. So my give back is doing that so that the access is put into place to help everyone who's helped me. You can never pay it back the same way, but you can pay it forward. So I pay it forward by doing this. This seems to be my mission and path in life, and I love doing it. I actually, it was thrust upon me, but it is something that I really passionately love doing.
So Janice, if I picked you up today, I invented a magic machine where I could pull you into the future 100 years, 150 years, 50 years, whatever it is, but you go into the future and you were able to look back on your life. What's some of the impact that you hope you've had on the world?
You know, I'm actually really pleased about, I think I've had the benefit, if you could call, I think once you've had cancer, you have a quick moment of evaluating your life. Have you accomplished and done everything you want to do? And I think I've had this incredible benefit from that. So I'm working on a project of making the world accessible for people with hearing loss, working on changing legislation in various states and countries, which to me is so meaningful. So on a professional level, I've had a very meaningful life. A couple of years ago, I had always wanted to travel to every country in the world. And when I had cancer, which thankfully is it's in remission, I had a real evaluation moment. And so I had during the past couple of years taken out, I do frequent flyer points as one of my hobbies. And I took out 80 credit cards over 5 years and earned 2.7 million points in sign-up bonuses. And I used those points to take a two-year sabbatical to travel on my quest to every country in the world. So I've been to now 194 countries, territories, and unrecognized nations. And then my final thing is, I've the other, one of my last checklist things was I always wanted to go back to school to Harvard. And I applied this year, thanks to Ruth giving me prodding, and I was accepted to Harvard's Kennedy School. And I'm hoping by going to Harvard's Kennedy School that I am going to be able to take hearing access to the next level and see where I go from there. But I think like I've led a good life, like a really full life. Like my checklists are pretty checked off. And the things that I didn't check off so far, I've reevaluated that were unimportant.
So what's coming next for you as you continue on this journey and continue this battle? You just mentioned going to Harvard, but what else is coming up?
My goal is to work on legislation connecting. So in various countries, like in Canada, they're creating their Disability Act. The European Union is creating a Disability Act. America has ADA. My goal is to connect all of these disabilities acts. So every country, of course, has proprietary language or access is either effective or it's not. I don't care what country you're in. This three-pronged approach, it's not like if you go to Canada or you go to Europe, that suddenly they're going to figure it out better, right? That no, we there may be technology that's improved, but the concept, the core concept of needing to bring it visual, auditory, and qualified interpretation, whatever the sign language is, it's not going to change in the near future unless there's a way to, this is a term that's hated in the hearing loss community, but quote, fix hearing loss, right? Unless you're, and if you want to be fixed, quote, being fixed, and I'm not suggesting someone should be fixed or not be fixed, but unless you eliminate the hearing loss altogether, that you're still going to always need this three-prong approach. I would like to make sure that every country in the world has the three-prong approach, not only within the country, but also in their legislation. And so one of my goals right now is working on and helping countries with legislation to ensure there's a consistency around the world and that we all learn from each other's errors and put each of our egos on the, you know, to the side so that we can really have effective communication globally for people with hearing loss.
Awesome. So you can find out more about Janice Lentz over at janicelentz.com and more about Hearing Access and the work she's doing there over at hearingaccess.com. Janice, is there anything else you'd like to share with the listener?
Yeah, I think one of the things people always ask me is how to affect change. And what is the one thing they can do to affect meaningful change for whatever the topic is? And the one thing that is so simple, but yet so many people fail to do, is to follow through. I am always amazed how few people ever follow through on whatever it is they want to do. They write one letter, one phone call. It takes more than one. I will tell you, some of my contacts, it's been four. Sometimes it's nine. Sometimes it's 19. And I will put numbers in the subject line to let people know how many times. And I will keep a phone log to document how many times I've reached out to places. But the persistence and follow through are, I think, the distinguishing features of why I've been so successful. It's not any other talent. It's just I show up. And I think so many people are afraid to show up and be persistent. And that's the only way things are going to change is by being persistent and showing up.
Thanks so much for listening to the Inspired Stewardship Podcast. As a subscriber and listener, we challenge you to not just sit back and passively listen, but act on what you've heard and find a way to live your calling. If you enjoyed this episode, please do us a favor. Go over to inspiredstewardship.com/iTunes rate, all one word, iTunes rate. It'll take you through how to leave a rating and review and how to make sure you're subscribed to the podcast so that you can get every episode as it comes out in your feed. Until next time, invest your time, your talent, and your treasures. Develop your influence and impact the world.